Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th of November, Anno Domini 2013. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. We'll start
with some
the
news.
You nice. Got it. Stephen Elop.
Who's he?
It's Pole, spelled backwards. I don't think that matters. He was the former Nokia CEO who now works for Microsoft.
Okay.
And he is considered shortlisted as a candidate to replace Steve Ballmer as Microsoft's chief executive officer. He said he would consider breaking with decades of tradition by focusing the company's strategy on making the popular Office software programs like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint available on a broad variety of smartphones and tablets, including those made by Apple and Google.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Kidding. Elop would probably move away from Microsoft's strategy of using these programs to drive demand for its flagship Windows operating system on personal computers and mobile devices. Said people who asked not to be identified because the 49-year-old executive hasn't finalized or publicly discussed his analysis of the business. Most of Microsoft's software has been tied to running on Windows. Microsoft became the world's largest software provider under Ballmer and Bill Gates by making Windows-based PCs running Office applications an industry standard. When Microsoft failed to come up with hit Windows-based phones and tablets, that left it with little role in the mobile market. Its refusal to adapt Office for Apple and devices based on Google's Android operating system hasn't helped its software usage. As he formulates some broad strategic outlines for Microsoft, Elop is drawing on his years as CEO of Nokia, where he showed he wasn't wedded to homegrown software by canceling the company's then-dominant Symbian phone software in 2010. He's also leaning on his previous experience as a Microsoft executive, where as head of the Office division, he pushed the company to enhance and find new ways to sell the software. Microsoft, which is shifting from software to focus on hardware and services, is searching for a new CEO after Ballmer said in August he would retire within a year. Retirement.
That's right.
Elop and Ford Motor Company CEO Alan Mulally, who may not be related at all to Megan, are among the external candidates in the interview process, as are three insiders, strategy chief Tony Bates, enterprise software chief Satya Nadella, and chief operating officer Kevin Turner. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Would you use Microsoft Office on your iOS or Android device? The choices are, I can't wait, that's interesting, meh, and not on your tin type. So far, we have 30 votes, and not on your tin type is well ahead. And of course, we know there's, you'll have more to say on that. So, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I would tell you that on my iPad, I would probably vote for, that's interesting. But, based on what Apple's done recently with their Office style apps, where they have tried to come up with a unified release for their desktop and iOS stuff recently. What they've done essentially is they've dumbed down the desktop version and introduced new features into the iOS version. So they're kind of meeting somewhere in the middle. I personally want my desktop versions to be very powerful. I don't want them to be constrained by trying to have feature parity between the iOS version and the desktop version. And I'm almost convinced that's something that Microsoft would do as well. So would you want a light version of Word and Excel on
right.
your tablet? Probably not. And I think when people think about Word and Excel, they're thinking about powerful tools that they can use to get business done or tools that they can use to create things. And dumbing down some of those features probably isn't going to make people happy.
No, I agree with you. There's something to be said for the 80-20 rule.
Right.
And I don't have a problem with the 80-20 rule. I use Google Docs for almost everything I do, and it really is an 80% word processor.
Yes.
There's some high-end things it doesn't do, and I don't care because I don't need them.
Right.
But you're right. I want those features available to be somewhere.
In an actual
and
application.
My desktop, right. And my desktop is the best place for those.
Right.
So you make the single most powerful thing you can for your desktop, and then offer what you can as you can on other platforms.
Precisely.
I completely agree with that. And remember, if you agree or disagree, I don't really care. We just want to hear from you. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be glad to talk to you. Michael is waiting.
That's right, with pen in hand.
Relatively impatiently, I must say.
So, Nick, did you hear about EverPix this week?
No, tell me about EverPix.
Okay, so EverPix was a service that you could subscribe to, and what they would do is they would scour your computer and grab all of your photos and back them up to their cloud backup storage space.
Nice.
Behind the scenes, they were using Amazon's S3 for storage, and the problem was too many people were using the free tier and not enough people were subscribing, and they were hoping to grow bigger and faster and get more funding to keep going. But they weren't able to do that, so they had to shutter the place this week.
Well, here's the thing. If you are going to offer a free section of that that's like the pay section of that, why are people going to pay for it?
Well,
they have no reason to pay for it.
They were limiting the capability to only backing up like the last 6 to 8 to 12 months' worth of photos if you were in the free tier.
Oh,
and
right.
Again.
Well, people have more photos than just the last 6 months. They have photos that go back and back and back further and further.
But the problem is there are so many places.
Right. So that was my question for you guys. Where are you backing up your photos? These are photos that we just don't have the negatives of these days anymore. So you can't get reprints done.
There's your problem. There are no negatives. So you have to keep the real ones.
Yep. You have to keep those digital images somewhere. And keeping them on a single disc is very, very risky.
Yeah. I keep them in two places. I have a backup drive on my network.
Okay.
And I keep the most important ones on my Google Drive.
Okay. All right. So you do that manually? You take time and move those?
Well,
every
picture I take from my phone goes automatically up to Google Drive.
Okay. All right.
And then once in a while, that's usually...
Periodically?
The night that I take those pictures.
Okay.
I move them to my hard drive.
So you have good habits instilled to handle that.
I better have good habits.
Right. Well, EverPix was great because it was very easy. Especially on the Mac, it would go and talk to iPhoto directly and grab the photos and automatically push them up. Anytime you connected your phone to your computer, it would slurp those photos from the phone and also push those up as well. And this is something, at least in the Mac world, that Apple isn't offering, and I really wish they would. Because these are just very fragile. People are keeping them on one drive in one place, and maybe they're doing a backup. But subscribing to one of those tools like Mozy or Carbonite or CrashPlan and getting those pieces of information that you care about in more than one place is really, really important.
Right. It's even not necessarily a good thing that you keep them on a drive in your home. Because God forbid something happens to your home, you've still lost those pictures.
Right. Yeah. Ideally, you want them in three different places.
Right.
You want them in two different locations, and the cloud counts as one, and your house counts as one, and a friend's house or something, or your parents' house, that would count as another one.
Right.
But I tell my clients, only back up the data you want to keep. You know, it's the same thing you heard from your dentist as a kid. You only brush the teeth you want to keep. It's the same deal with data.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and nothing breaks my heart more than somebody saying, my hard drive died, my computer died, and all my pictures are on it.
Yeah.
Can you do something about it? Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But how difficult would it have been for you to just back up once in a while?
Well, if you want to put it in terms of dollars and cents, I had a client recently who lost a bunch of data, and we sent a drive out to Drive Savers, and they came back with a quote. And they said, if we do it with our economy service for a 250 gig drive, which is not a big drive these days, it was going to be a minimum of $1,800, and that was with my referral discount.
Wow.
$1,800.
Yeah.
So that was the minimum, and it was still going to take a week or two to get back. So
yep.
Please, people, sign up for something. Back up that data that you want to keep.
And it's not expensive.
No.
Carbonite is a few bucks a month.
You can literally back up every computer in your house for 10 or 12 bucks a month.
Yeah.
With unlimited cloud storage through CrashPlan.
Right.
And there are cheaper plans if you only have one or two machines.
Right. It's ridiculous. In terms of the documents that I have them on my hard drive every night, every morning at 3 a.m. They are sync over to my other hard drive on that machine.
Okay.
They are sync up to my storage space, which is still at RIT.
Yeah.
And I'm now working on putting them on another drive on nickf.com, actually. So that I'll have them in multiple places.
Right.
Because I make a living writing stuff.
Right. And when that goes away, when your words evaporate, then what do you have to use for reference?
And again, I have, I'm now starting to write a lot of stuff in Google Docs because mm-hmm. most of what I write is straight text. But what's nice about that is if you write something actually in Google Docs, it takes none of your storage space.
Ah, they don't count that against you. Then.
They don't count that against you.
Nice.
And they have something called Google Takeout, which is part of the Data Liberation Front.
Okay.
They're calling it. It's your data. You can download it anytime you want.
So they package that up so you can just pull it down?
Yeah.
Nice.
You say, I want all my documents or all my spreadsheets or everything. It doesn't matter. And if it's big, if you include your photos and stuff like that, they say, we'll let you know when it's zipped up.
Uh-huh.
And then they send you a thing, you link it, you download it, it's yours.
And then you've got it, and you can put it on a flash drive or
whatever you want to do with it.
Push it wherever you need to have it. That's great. One thing that CrashPlan has done in the past 2 years, and I hope that they'll do it again, is they have a Black Friday sale. So at midnight on Friday after Thanksgiving, they start the price at some ridiculously low rate. And I'm talking about the unlimited number of computers with unlimited storage. This is what they've done in the past 2 years. I can't predict what they're going to do this year. I hope they continue it. So get up early Friday morning and check CrashPlan's website or whatever your favorite deal or bargain site is and see if they've got a listing for this. They were starting at ridiculously early in the morning with a super, super bargain. And so instead of like $150 or $160 a year, it was like $4 a year.
Nice.
For unlimited machines.
I don't know how you beat that.
And as the deal went on through the day, the price went up.
Oh, I love that.
So if you decide to sleep in, well, you might end up paying, you know, $12 for the entire year. But as the day went on, the price would get higher and higher and higher. So I encourage anyone who's listening, if you're not going to sign up today, which I do recommend, definitely take a look around on Black Friday and see if some of these online backup services are offering a significant discount for Black Friday. Also makes a fantastic gift for that technophobic friend who has a computer and has a digital camera or a phone and they're backing up their photos or have important things that you care about. It's so nice to know that people are not going to come to you in the future and say, my computer doesn't seem to turn on anymore. Huh, what should I do about that?
It's nice
to be able to say, well, we don't have to worry about it because we know your stuff's protected somewhere else and we can pull it down. Isn't that a nice thing to have to
and all
to
you
be
have
able
to do
say?
Is remember your CrashPlan password.
Well, I'm sure they have some nice people that will help you recover
sure
that.
Do. I'm sure they do. It's available for Windows, Mac, Linux, and Solaris.
Yeah, that's uncommon.
That's uncommon. I suspect it was written by people who originally wrote it for Solaris Systems and then put it to everything
right.
else. It's at CrashPlan.com, CrashPlan.com. They have a lovely 30-day free trial, so you can set it up, make it work, be assured that it's going to happen. And then you can do that buy online business. And, of course, if you're looking at Black Friday, which is the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Coming soon.
That's in the middle of your 30-day trial, so go for it.
Oh, actually, that sounds like a brilliant idea.
And here it is, CrashPlan Plus, 10 gigs, $2 a month.
Unlimited.
CrashPlan Plus Unlimited is $4 a month. For your entire family, unlimited is $9 a month.
That's $2 a week, people.
Holy moly.
Check it out.
For a year, for the individual unlimited plan, it's $59.99 right now for a year. They're having a sale.
Right.
And if you buy 2 years, it's $114.99.
Yeah, the longer you choose to subscribe for, the more money you save up front. But This is the service I recommend to my clients. It's the one that I trust and I use myself. It will also work with a local drive. So if you've got a drive that you picked up at your favorite office supply store and you plug it in, you can tell CrashPlan, hey, by the way, I've got this drive over here. While you're making copies up to the cloud, make a second copy over to this local drive.
Nice.
And it all happens automatically. So you
don't
have to do anything.
See, automatic is good because then you don't have to remember.
Right.
The other thing is I had a long discussion with a couple of different people this week about backing up the entire hard drive.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I'm a fan of backing up your data. Because if you're at the point where something died so violently that you need to restore, you probably want to start with a fresh copy of your operating system anyway.
Right.
Because something somewhere in the registry, if you're using Windows or somewhere else, is screwed up.
Right. And drives are cheap.
So you install the operating system for real and then back up, bring all your stuff back.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, I realized that. We'll talk about that when we come back. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Before we left, I got cut off by time, but one of the things that I understand why people want to back up everything is they don't want to have to reinstall their software.
Right.
I forget about that because I run Linux. all my software is free. It's all part of the repository. So
sure. No crazy 12-digit codes to remember.
I don't have to remember anything. I just have to install it, and I'm on my way. But, yeah, I get it. And, of course, I'm mostly on my Chromebook now. I got the new HP 14 Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Fast. Screen is great. I got the high-end model, so it comes with 4 gig of RAM and 200 megabytes a month of 4G data from T-Mobile.
Right.
So if I find myself somewhere where there's no,
no Wi-Fi.
What you call it, no Wi-Fi, I can still do... You know, I can do email and maybe some writing or whatever. I'm obviously not going to watch a movie.
Right. So to be clear, there's no monthly payment for that data.
And there's no monthly payment for that.
It's upfront, and then that's it.
For 2 years.
Okay.
You get it for 2 years. You get it for a year.
Yeah.
Well, and this is actually, I get it. You go and you sign up and you say, this is my machine.
Okay.
And then you have it for a year. At the end of that year, you go and say, I still own this machine.
Okay.
Right, because otherwise, if I sold that machine to you, T-Mobile doesn't want you to have that
I see.
Free data.
So it's the original owner gets that
right,
deal.
Right. And that's okay. I get that. So that's pretty nice.
Nice.
I like that.
Yeah, the one thing I tell people who really want to have a backup of everything is it's probably better to do a clone of your computer. That's a bit-for-bit copy onto
right.
a second hard drive, so that if something happens to the drive that's inside your laptop or inside your iMac or inside your PC, we can simply swap the two drives physically, and you can be back to where you were. And a clone is something you can keep up to date relatively easily these days.
Right. Right. Listen, you people, pay attention to this. Microsoft yesterday, or earlier this week, again put the scare into Windows XP users, telling them that after April 8th, 2014, the chance that malware will infect their PCs could jump by 2/3.
So that's 6 months from now, right?
6 months from now. The claim made by Tim Raines, director of Microsoft Trustworthy Computing Group, came on the heels of the release of the company's twice annual security intelligence report. Following up on comments he made in August, Raines again warned Windows XP stragglers to expect an increase in attacks when the frankly ancient operating system exits support in 5 months. After end of support, attackers will have an advantage over defenders who continue to run Windows XP, Raines said Tuesday in a blog post. After April of next year, when we release monthly security updates for supported versions of Windows, attackers will try and reverse engineer them to identify any vulnerabilities that also exist in Windows XP, which will no longer be updated. If they succeed, attackers will have the capability to develop exploit code to take advantage of them. Raines then went a step further and cited statistics from Microsoft's own telemetry gathering efforts to give customers an idea of the increased threat after support ends. We have already had a glimmer of what happens when a Windows XP-based platform goes out of support, Rain said. In the 2 years after Windows XP Service Pack 2 went out of support, its malware infection rate was 66% higher than Windows XP Service Pack 3, which was the last supported version of XP. Support for Windows XP Service Pack 2 ended in July 2010, a little over 2 years after the release of XP Service Pack 3. While there could be no reason while there could be other reasons for different infection rates, including lack of up-to-date security software, Rain's implied assumption was that it was because of XP Service Pack 2 not being patched, because it could not be, while XP Service Pack 3 had been. Microsoft has been extremely blunt about the dangers customers will face next year after Windows XP support vanishes, belittling the creaky OS's security prowess, even at attacking it at times. That's unusual. Microsoft's usual tactic is to simply ignore all older operating systems, as it does with Windows Vista, the, to be fair, flop that now accounts for just 4% of all Windows PCs. So, our question to you. Listen, it's statistics, man. Should we on Soundbite stop supporting XP in April? Since everybody else is, and it's now a dangerous operating system, should we stop answering questions about it to urge people to move on?
Here's what I tell people who are still running XP, and I just heard about this recently. Windows XP is so old.
How old is it?
Thank you. It is so old, and this isn't even a joke, it's so old that it came out before September 11th happened.
Yeah, think about that.
Literally. I don't have to make that up. That's a irrefutable fact, but it is really beyond its life. And there's so much nice new stuff that you can get. The prices are not nearly as much as they used to be to buy a machine, especially back in those days. So treat yourself, you know.
For $250, you can get a Chromebook.
Right, right.
You know, and depending on what you do, that's enough for a lot of people.
It really is.
It really is.
And a tablet is also a good choice. There's a lot less to worry about on a tablet.
A tablet is the same thing. There's no updates happen in the background. You just hit a button and they magically happen. They don't happen every 2 hours like they do on Windows XP.
Right.
It's a good deal. So, should we on Soundbite stop supporting XP in April? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Scott did in Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Scott. What's up?
I am having problems with iTunes and iBook.
Okay.
iTunes used to have a books folder where you could do things that you do with music. You could make categories and make author's name and things of that sort. They have removed the book folder from iTunes, and that's what's causing me a problem. They replaced the book folder with a new program called iBooks, which has none of these features. You cannot add in your categories. You cannot put in author's name or anything like that. I have uploaded a new PDF. I want to put in this category, and then me. I'm the author, but I can't do it. I went to Apple Forums. They suggest I delete the file from iBooks and upload it to iTunes where I can change the category. Well, there's no place in iTunes to change it.
So was the thing...
I can't find it in iTunes.
Right. Was it a PDF that you said that it was something that you wrote yourself?
It's a PDF I wrote, yes.
Okay. And when you put it in iTunes, you expect it to be able to change its category.
That's correct, and put in the fact that I'm author as well.
Okay. So these are additional fields that you wanted to add to that file so that
That's
it
right.
shows up properly. Is this something you publish for other people as well? Is it something that you're selling? Or?
No. I organize. See, I can then look at things by author or by category. In both iTunes, or used to be in iTunes, I can't do it in iTunes anymore, but in iBooks. And so I don't have that available to me. And for example, I was in a meeting today, and I wanted to find a file I had. Well, I had to look through, 80 books just to find out, a list of 80 books, just to find the one file that I was the author of, as opposed to some book I'd bought.
Right.
But you can't do this in iBooks.
No,
and you can't do this in iTunes.
Right. The the iBooks application does not let you edit these fields that you want to edit. We call those metadata. They're information about your file, information about your information. That is essentially non-existent in iBooks, at least as of today.
Well, now, hold on a minute. If you select the PDF in iBook and right-click on it and select Get Info.
Okay, I'm going to try that.
You should see a bunch of different choices, including a summary, info, video, sorting options, lyrics, artwork.
Now, right-clicking brings up the following selections. Read, share, add to collection, new collection from selection. There's no Get Info.
Dagnabbit.
Yeah, you're looking. I think you're looking at iTunes.
Yeah.
I'm looking at iBook.
Right. Yeah. Nick is investigating solutions, but he found iTunes.
Yeah. If you, I'm talking about it being in iTunes, not in iBook.
He says when he tries to copy it in.
I can't find the file in iTunes.
Oh.
I cannot find any of my books in iTunes.
Okay, so in the library, it doesn't list books as a choice.
Right.
Nope.
Which version of iTunes are you using?
Because
they've had a couple of releases in the past few months.
I think I had the latest one, but I'm trying to find out about iTunes. Okay. It says 11.1.3.
Okay. Well, they said that there's some performance improvements there. Boy, we're looking this up as quickly as we can to try and get you a good solution.
I'm sorry, Scott.
No, I think they screwed up, frankly.
Sure.
I think they did, too.
Yeah.
I think they did, too. Let us look into this, and we'll talk tomorrow in Second Life.
Okay.
A little more about this. I apologize.
If you find something during the show, I'll be listening to the rest of the show anyway.
Yes.
All right, thanks.
That's a great call out to other listeners, that if you think you've found an answer that is definitely what Scott's looking for, be sure to call us and let us know. We're going to keep looking for that. Thank you.
Right.
Thanks. Yeah, and that's a good point to remind everybody that we also meet in Second Life Sunday nights, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Linden Time. Search for Nihil Infinity, N-I-H-I-L, Nihil Infinity, and we'll be happy to give you a teleport over to where we are.
Right. According to Wikipedia, when 10.9 Mavericks came out, which was a couple of weeks ago, books, though not PDF documents, could only be read using the app on any iOS device and not on a user's Mac or PC. With the release of Mavericks, Apple released a standalone iBooks app for OS X, and that's what our caller was talking about, which moved the books from the iTunes library and allows Mac users to read those books on their Macs. PDF documents can be read using Preview or any other PDF reader or editor application that the user has on their machine. So it sounds like they really took the PDF storage capabilities out of iTunes. And they are apparently trying to do that in iBooks. Last I knew, you could put PDFs in iBooks, but it sounds like the metadata editing capabilities of iBooks are not as good as what they used to be. Because iTunes itself was meant for, originally, music files, and you'd want to keep track of what was the title of the song, who was the artist of the song, when was it released, what track number was it on the original disc, and all of these things you want to keep track of. People were using that editing capability to edit information about their other files too, like the PDF files or other files that they wanted to keep track of.
Right, and I think
that was an extension of iTunes.
Right, and I think part of what's happened now is because iBook is a separate application, their assumption is that you will use iBook Author to create the iBooks, and you can do that in iBook Author.
Yeah, the other thing you might be able to do is in Preview, you may be able to edit those metadata fields in Preview itself. I know when you compose a PDF, you get the ability to specify the author, the release date, and so forth and so on, and embed that in the PDF.
So you
that
create
would be another...
the metadata elsewhere in Preview. And
I
then...
would check Preview and see if you get those options. I suspect they are there, but I'd have to research that a little bit.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Stephen from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Stephen. What's up?
Well, excuse me. I was just listening to what you were saying about backing up on the cloud,
yes,
more or less. I would personally disagree with that from my personal point of view. I would say, like, I do a lot of artwork, and I'm doing, like, experimenting with video. I'm not a professional or anything. I've been at this for years, so. And I've got relatively 300 to 400 GB of backup to take care of now. And I experimented looking at some of these places, and one of the ones you mentioned I was looking at, they said something about once you reach a certain limit of GB memory, then it slows down tremendously. Now, I'm also thinking if you had a business and you had confidential information where you're gathering, like, Social Security numbers or credit card numbers, you need to do backups. Wouldn't it be a lot safer if you just grab one of those little portable hard drives that you can... They usually come with encryption software, too. Back it up on that and stick it in a bank lockbox at a bank as a backup to have a second place for it instead of having it, say, for instance, on the cloud. Because, honestly, I don't really know what's going on the other side. You don't even know who it's going to, where it is. You have no control over the circumstances.
Well, you're absolutely right. The thing we were first talking about, of course, was for home users who generally don't have anything that's that confidential. In terms of stuff, you know, they're writing letters to Aunt Fanny and all that stuff. But the big thing is, if you are a business, then you pay for a commercial service.
Okay.
Right. I mean, how much is your business worth to you?
Probably at least a couple million.
Right.
I mean, if you're doing any reasonable amount of revenue.
I see this all the time as well. All my business files are on this. Where's your backup? Well, I don't have a backup. Then you don't care about your business. I'm sorry, I can't do magic. You don't care enough about your business to get a commercial backup system. You pay for a commercial office. You have commercial business accounts, but you won't pay for commercial backup?
So
that's just nuts.
Yeah.
The thing to know about, and again, I'm talking about CrashPlan a lot because that's the one I'm most familiar with. CrashPlan encrypts your data before it ever leaves your computer. They also compress it so that it takes less time to move. Video files are generally inherently compressed, so they don't compress well after the fact. That being said, I've got about 500 gigs worth of data from my home office. I happily make use of CrashPlan. It did take probably a solid couple weeks of uploading, and it is smart enough to know to upload faster at night and upload slower during the day when you're on the computer. So it's fairly intelligent about that. And you're right, it did take a little while. So what I did was, like you said, I got that external drive. I let CrashPlan know about it. And it started backing up to that quickly, and it was done with that in a couple of hours. And then I let it push things up to the cloud service over the next couple of weeks.
For me personally, though, I think I'd feel a lot more in control if you just, like, I always thought that putting it, like, in a lockbox in a bank. They got these little small passport-type ones that...
No, I get all that. The big point there, of course, is are you disciplined enough to do it every single day?
That's
right.
Correct. Hey,
that's
can
true.
I make another point?
Very quickly,
XP?
We got to take a break.
Yeah.
Go. Can you hold on?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we'll take the break, and we'll keep Steven on the line, and in just a couple of minutes, we'll come back with Dennis Worcester, Michael Oden, Steven from Rochester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour. And you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Stephen from Rochester on the line. What's your next question there, Stephen?
Okay, getting back with XP, I realize that's an old program and such, but, you know, recently I was just up at BJ's. They're still using it there. I've seen it there. I was at the Eastman Dental Center. They're still using it.
Yep, it's a dumb idea all around.
If you're not online, is it still safe to use it? My problem is, yeah, you're right. You know, they got damn good deals on computers and software today compared to 10 years ago. But I have, personally, such an investment on old... I had a chunk of money 10 years ago to buy a bunch of graphic arts software that would cost me thousands of dollars, and that's why I don't want to update, because I'd have to get all that replaced. And that stuff's cost more than it did 10 years ago instead of less money.
If you can be self-sufficient with the software and the hardware that you have, and you don't expect anybody else to help you out, and you want to run those things yourself, more power to you.
Yeah, as long as I leave it off the internet, right?
Well,
no, as long as you never ask anyone else for help to support it.
Right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Nobody will support it because it's so old. Nobody will help you with it because it's so old. If you put a file from anywhere else onto that machine, the chances of an infection are big. So it becomes a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
You know, use it as long as you want. Just be aware that at any moment, it can go up in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, I see. I was thinking all that as long as you leave it off the internet.
Leaving it off the internet means you never, ever go online. You never put a file in there that's been online.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just disconnected from the internet. It's all of that.
Can I ask one thing? What you just said now, I want to ask you one question. You said never put a file online. Now, if something online comes through another computer where it's going through some kind of software detection, it would still get through because they're not going to be pulling that stuff out. And if you were to transfer it from one computer that was, like, say, Windows 8 and then back to XP, you could still pick up a virus even though it went through the security software?
Of course you can. As we have always said, it's a game of leapfrog. You are never 100% safe. There's always the possibility that something you get is not being detected yet because it's brand new. That's called a zero-day infection. You get it first before anybody else sees it and before anybody else can protect against it.
All right. Okay, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. Oh, I agree. There's you know, different circumstances for everybody. I get all of that. But the reality is no matter what else you do, you can be infected. And running an operating system that's 15 years old.
Right. The computers just aren't blenders. You know, they're not an electric motor hooked up to a blade with a pitcher on the top where you make a nice smoothie. Mm-hmm. These are devices that are meant to take information in and information out, and they're meant to understand what the programmers knew about and were able to accomplish back when that machine and that software was made. And since then, many smart people, some who are on the good guy's side and some who aren't, have decided that they would like to use that machine as well. And you're potentially open to that just because of the nature of a general computing device like a personal computer.
Right. I tell people all the time, if this is your main machine, I'm not going to touch it. I don't want to be involved. But if it's a second machine, if you're just looking to have a backup machine or something to play with or whatever, consider taking that old machine and putting Linux on it.
Maybe. For some people, that makes sense.
Yeah, at the very least, learn to play with it, figure out what it does, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, if you're inclined to be interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, my point. But I don't really... XP is done.
Nope.
XP is done. It's 15 years old. Time to let it retire, put it out to pasture, let it go to stud, leave it alone.
Right.
All right, our next caller is Bill from Webster, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
Hey, buddies, how are you?
Hello.
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I am looking for the email address to pay my $15 membership fee to Ask Nick.
Ah.
I can't find it.
Yeah, it's because I took it down, because I'm having an existential crisis.
Oh, no.
About
again?
Yeah.
It's crisis time, everybody.
Here's, do this to me, Nick.
No, here's the thing. I'll tell you exactly what's going on, Bill. There's a new feature out. Actually, it was my very next news item, but I'll just talk about it instead. There's a new feature out called Helpouts from Google.
Yeah.
And so there's two things. For those of you who don't know, Ask Nick is a system I've run for a decade now, where people sign up $15 a year. I'm actually thinking of making it $19.95 a year. But they sign up for $15 a year, and I send out three email Q&As a week.
Okay.
Not necessarily your three questions, but three questions.
Okay.
And one of those also goes to the free or the Nick Light list.
Uh-huh.
And then there were places where you could get online and do all kinds of stuff. But I had some issues that are now solved that were not technical issues, but those issues are solved. So I have sNick.com, and I was about to put it back up when I thought, is there a better way to do this? Is there a better way to provide service to people who want sNick types of service?
Okay.
So I started looking around. I can still do the Q&A thing, and I may well do that. And I actually, it's easy for me to do that. So that's the simple way out. But I also thought about this new thing called Google Helpouts. You know about Google Hangouts. You've heard about those where we're running around right now where people get online and they can chat back and forth or do whatever they do.
So it's a multi-person video chat.
It's a multi-person video chat. Google Helpouts is the same thing, but you pay for the help.
Okay.
Okay, can I ask a more important question?
Sure.
Okay. How do I go about this? I am looking for a consultant. You know everybody.
I know a lot of people.
You know everybody. Here's what I'm attempting to do. I design restaurant point-of-sale systems.
Okay.
Like when you go into McDonald's, I have clients all over the United States. I'm looking to create a handheld system, okay, where the server goes up to the table, takes the order. They don't have to go back to the computer. It goes to the computer.
Okay.
Sure.
Now, all my stuff is written in VB6, okay? And what I'm I could go with a tablet that has Windows 8. However, those are much more expensive than an Android tablet.
Right.
Right? Now, I guess my question is, I don't think I can use VB6. I think this has to be translated, my programs, into another language. That's what I'm scared about, and I'm looking to find out. I'd be glad to pay a consultant to tell me how to do this. And I have no idea, but I want to work with somebody in Rochester. And so I want to get on Nick's thing, explain my problem, and perhaps he could tell me somebody.
What I would do, if I were you, I'm Dennis, and I have a friend named Todd, and Todd and his friend Steve run a group called App Rochester. It's a group of mobile developers here in town that get together and talk about what's new in the mobile development space.
Okay.
They themselves may not be able to help you, but they may be able to point you in the right direction to somebody who can.
Okay.
If you go to approchester.com.
App? Hold
yep,
on.
APP.
R-O-C-H-E-S-T-E-R.
Right.
Dot com. Net.
.com.
Right. If you go there, you will find out when our next meeting is. And I believe it's coming up on the 12th, which
yep.
is this coming Tuesday. And you can find out where it is and come and join us and explain what's going on. And we can, if we can't help you ourselves, we can either direct you to a local company who does contract work, or we can direct you to a local headhunter who might help you be in touch with someone who could help
sure.
you.
Okay, well, all right, that sounds wonderful. That may be the answer to my problem. One other quick one is Win 7 better than Win 8?
My
requirements are very minimal, no graphics, nothing like that.
In my opinion, yes, but if you're going to be on a desktop machine, my
yeah.
opinion is yes, at least for now. I have not played with Windows 8.1 yet, which was just released, I think, last month. But at this moment, unless you're using it on a tablet, I say stick with Windows 7.
Yeah, you're much more likely to be used to the way Windows 7 works than the way Windows 8 works.
I find XP a very, very old friend of mine.
Well, and 7 works the same way.
Yeah,
right.
That's good.
Yep, so that's something
more
to keep in mind.
Time? I appreciate it very much.
Sure.
And it's good talking to you, Nick. I haven't talked to you for a few years.
I know.
I was always a member of yours. I've been a little tied up. Take it easy, guys. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, you too. And when Ask Nick is back online, I'll certainly let you know.
Yeah, that's great.
That's but yeah, the now what he's trying to do, it makes a lot of sense because it saves steps for the server.
Sure.
Which saves time for the restaurant.
Right.
And that's all to the good.
It helps you turn those tables over more quickly, which
right.
is really what the name of the game is in the restaurant business,
right.
Especially for fine dining. The there are a couple of existing tools for this. I know I watched some of those restaurant makeover shows,
you know,
the ones I'm talking about, and it seems like once in a while they will have product placement with some device or some other company who has got a similar product that
yep.
they put in place, and that's like one of the gifts they give to this restaurant they're trying
right.
to turn around.
Well, and I get that, and he wants his to keep up with that.
Right.
There's really two ways to do that. One is to create an app that is self-contained,
mm-hmm.
and the other is to create a web app, which
yeah,
means you just go to a
true.
Web page that has all the information there.
Right, and it's been 15 years since I've used Visual Basic to develop a web app.
Well, there's that.
But yeah, with the ActiveX plugin and all those things. In fact, I imagine
well,
that's really deprecated.
Well, you can't use ActiveX, right?
Yeah.
Because you couldn't use that on a tablet of any sort.
No, no. So,
and I do understand his issue with the Android tablets being less expensive.
Yeah, for sure.
In point of fact, to go to yet a different
yeah.
Thing.
Nice segue.
I will read this news item, which is
okay.
when Intel recently predicted $99 tablets for the upcoming holiday season, it must have forgotten last year's deals. Those included a $49 7-inch Android tablet Black Friday special that we'll talk a little bit more about after we take a break. We're going to take a slightly longer break this time.
Okay.
Because this is, after
it's
all,
the top of
the hour. Right. And so we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dennis Worster, who has kindly consented to come in the place of both Steve Ray and Dave Enright. He's
That's
doing
right.
twice
it
the work.
It takes twice as many people.
Michael Oden, who is taking over the board duties.
He's on the ones and
for
twos.
For Dave, he's done a magnificent job so far. We'll see how he screws up next hour. And I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. You know that, and it's member-supported. That's right, member-supported. Jazz 90.1. So stay tuned. Listen to all these delightful little economic dramas that will be coming your way, and then we'll be back on the other side with a whole lot more show. So give us a call. Send in your questions. We'll be glad to answer them for you. Thanks.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I started reading about the Android Black Friday deals. It looks like these deals are coming back. Walmart already has some pre-Black Friday online specials available, including an Android tablet from third-tier brand Excelio for the familiar $49 price. Like last year's Black Friday deal, it includes an anemic 4 gigabytes of onboard storage, but this year's model offers a roomier 10.1-inch screen. Likewise, the leaked Toys R Us Black Friday ad shows a Polaroid-branded Android tablet for $49.99, although this one is a 7-inch tablet, again with just 4 gigabytes of user-accessible storage. Regional retailer H.H. Gregg has a 7-inch Android tablet for $70 as part of its pre-Black Friday special, and yes, it only has 4 gig of storage as well. While most Black Friday deals are still under wraps, these appear to be early indicators of more cut-rate tablet specials to come. They're invariably using Android for obvious reasons, although they're more likely to use an older version that is powered by basic specs. No Retina quality displays, no latest quad-core processors. Market research firms like IDC have seen that such budget tablets are the reason that Android will surpass iOS as the top tablet platform and that once hot e-readers are on the ropes. Gartner sees the tablet market bifurcating into budget and premium segments, not unlike the global cell phone market. It's tricky to track down sales info for budget tablets in the U.S., but for what it's worth, the Excelio tablet Walmart discounted to $49 is already unavailable online. With Apple showing showing little interest in reducing its prices, developing markets and those who can't afford its iPads or even Google or Samsung's premium Android tablets can join the tablet revolution on the cheap, via what one tech blogger is calling the feature phones of tablets. For basic internet access, reading digital books, viewing online video, a $50 Android tablet may be enough, even if it's barely enough. For kids who will be happy with any tablet and not just an iPad, budget models could make a good holiday gift. Certainly for somebody like Bill,
right,
who's looking to buy a bunch of them for waiters and waitresses, $50 is a good price point.
Yeah,
and you don't need more.
As long as the performance is there, so that when you're taking right. the order from the first person at the table and you type in, okay, they want the steak dinner with the side salad.
Well, my assumption is going to be puck, puck, puck.
Right,
know?
Yeah. Well, as long as the UI can keep up with that.
Right, exactly. So, will a $50 Android tablet be on your holiday shopping list? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. A $50 tablet for as an e-reader that also does a couple of other things
right.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, you only get 4 gig of storage, so you can't put more than 150 books on it.
Right.
But 150 books.
It's good for a weekend, you know.
It's good for a weekend, and then you load a different 150 books.
Right.
You know, all of the companies, Amazon's Kindle Reader, Barnes & Noble's Nook Reader, half a dozen other readers are all available as Android apps, and they all manage that. So if you put 150 books on it and then buy 5 more, it automatically dumps the oldest ones.
The other thing to look for is, say, after the holidays, look in January and February. If you're not ready to spend as much as $50, there are going to be people who are going to get these and realize, you know what, this isn't quite what I wanted. I need something a little bit more powerful than this. And then they'll sell it for $30.
Or who upgraded.
Right. Or moved on to something else.
Yeah, I think that's going to be big. I have a Nexus 7, as I've said ad nauseum. I love it. It's fast. It's convenient. It does everything I want it to do. 100 gazillion apps. I'm rarely somewhere where I don't have Wi-Fi. And if I don't have Wi-Fi, I can use my phone, which has all the same sets of stuff on it.
Right.
So I'm happy with that. But again, I do a lot more stuff than just read.
Sure. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm at the other end. I don't always buy the latest computer, and I don't always buy the latest equipment for the stuff at my desk, but when it comes to my mobile tablet, I spend a little bit more money there.
Yeah.
I went and got the latest iPad Air.
Which is pretty.
It's nice. And I brought them both in so Nick could see them and hold one in one hand and one in the other. And it is significantly lighter. The screen is still just as good. The battery life is still just as good. It's thinner. It's smaller. And it's still got that same beautiful 10-inch screen and 10-hour battery life that I love. But it will run all the apps I love, and it's so much faster now. So I'm very happy with it. But that being said, the last model was no slouch either. I mean, it had a fantastic camera on the back. It still ran things very quickly. I'm still a big fan of it. And an iPad 4 is not a bad machine, and an iPad Air is a fantastic machine. So either one of those makes a great choice. And don't be afraid to buy one used if you want to.
Right, and you can find, as Steve calls them, yesterday's model.
That's right.
At lots of places, too. So you don't, I mean, assuming you don't need the best.
No.
It's not going to be $50. It's going to be more like $350, but still.
Right, yeah, but there's no reason, because there are so few moving parts, you know, there are a couple of switches on the side. I mean, there's no spinning hard drive inside it. There's not a lot to wear out, per se.
Right.
So as long as somebody took reasonably good care of it, and it's not all scratched up, and the screen still looks nice, there's no sense in paying full price if you don't really need today's model.
Right. I completely agree. There's, you know, when they first came out, it was a very slender market.
Right.
The market has gotten bigger, and people are now used to the idea of tablets.
Mm-hmm.
And now is when the used ones are coming out. I've seen them at garage sales.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that yet.
Not
high-end stuff, but
not high-end ones. But I've seen one or two, and it's the same thing. Like you said, at yesterday's model or unsold inventory from the old model,
right,
whatever
right.
it is. People certainly have those out there, and if you don't need absolutely to have the latest and greatest and best and most perfect, then absolutely take a look at those at the one generation back model.
Right, buy the best of last year's model.
Exactly.
Yeah, save a lot of cash that way.
Exactly.
So you have another news item?
I do.
All right.
This one is about helpouts.
Okay.
Google launched the Helpouts service this week. The initiative aims to bring live video tutorials, instructions, and services to users via the company's Hangouts streaming video platform. Think of it as an on-demand video marketplace for how-to miscellany, a way to receive walkthroughs on concepts as simple as spackling a hole in your drywall, how to make the perfect turkey stuffing for Thanksgiving dinner, how to make that perfect martini. Never mind. If you look at live video today on the web, it kind of reminds me of the beginning of the web back in the 90s with low-resolution images and videos, said VP of Engineering Udi Manber.
Okay.
Udi Manber. Helpouts look so good you feel like you're already there. I don't know what he means by that, but there it is. The concept is clean and simple. You have a query on how to accomplish some sort of task. You search through one of Google's initial 1,000-plus launch partners for help. Helpouts will offer up a list of participants who can help you. You choose from them based on their relevance and qualifications, which are vetted by Google, and their overall batting average, which are vetted by users with feedback reviews. Pick your partner. Ideally, you'll be guided through your task live via the video feed, streamed to either desktops, Android mobile devices, whatever, everything. After the session, you pay for your connected Google Wallet account based on a flat fee or a per minute rate chosen before you start the call. Google takes a 20% cut, the rest going to the service provider. People said that shopping would not happen on the web on a large scale. Those people were wrong, Manber said. We expect and hope to bring that level of efficiency to services as well. One reason the web is so powerful is that it brings with it a completely new level of efficiency and convenience, he said. It's easy to pick holes in Google's Helpout pitch right off the bat, though the company assures that it vets all of its partners and instructor participants. That's hardly a scalable solution over time, the tackling of which Manber wouldn't elaborate upon. And you're basically required to be locked into the Googleverse to use Helpouts. The service requires you to have a Google Plus account and, for now at least, an active Google Wallet account. Not to mention that millions of instructional videos exist on another property Google already owns, YouTube,
yeah.
But those are nobody's found a way to monetize those except for maybe Jenny Marbles.
Well, yeah, so up till now on YouTube, you'd make a video of yourself fixing a lawnmower and say, you know, if you've got this model lawnmower, these are the things you need to look out for, and this particular one has this problem, and we're going to solve it today, so here's how we do it. And he gets out his tools, and he solves it, and he says, be sure to click like and click subscribe and favorite this and give it a thumbs up. And apparently Google puts ads against this, and I guess the guy who's doing the fixing of the lawnmower can receive some fractional dollar.
If you get a certain number of
I don't know precisely how that works.
Stuff like that.
Okay.
That's why people like Jenny Marbles are making a lot of money on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
of what they do. But despite all this.
So this could be better.
Right.
In terms of total dollars for the average dude.
Right. And if so, for example, you might say, I really need to find out how to
braid my daughter's hair.
Braid my daughter's hair. And you get online and somebody says, okay, here's what you grab these three strands and these three strands and roll them over and do this and blah, blah, blah.
And they show it to you and the camera works good.
And your camera works good. They can correct your technique.
True. Because it would
be
bidirectional.
Because it's interactive.
Uh-huh.
That's the big difference here.
Yes, but here's the thing. Is there going to be a market for that?
Well, that's the point. Is there going to be a market for that?
How many people want braided hair?
I don't think there necessarily is a market for that.
Well, here's an interesting thing. I can't think of the guy's name, but there was a guy during the Depression who became a multimillionaire during the Depression by putting out a bunch of 5-cent pamphlets. How to change the oil in your John Deere tractor. how to sharpen the blades on your harvester combine. That specific, a nickel a piece, and he sold billions of them. Because when people need one specific tiny piece of information, they're willing to pay a tiny specific amount of money for that. And if you've got enough people, that right. audience becomes big enough that somebody's going to buy what you're selling.
And I think the big thing will be, will Hangouts let you record the thing you're doing or make a recording and then sell that multiple times? Or are you going to have to be face-to-face with somebody? Because that doesn't, as it's, the article said, that doesn't scale. That's you in front of your camera all day long for,
right.
for some amount.
It does say, Manber says, Ubi Manber, Udi Manber, does say that he absolutely envisions an offline component to the service.
Okay, good. I think that would
I don't know what that means.
Well, I would assume that it means you record yourself helping somebody out, and then somebody comes back later and says, oh, look, I can figure out how to do this. I can watch his recording for $2. But that means you're competing directly against all the people who are putting it out for free on YouTube, and those results are also going to pop up in a Google search.
Well, but here's the thing. It's the difference between – it's a lot like what we do. If we just said to people, go look here.
So
oh, you've
general,
got a problem, go look here.
General information versus specific to you, Nick Francesco.
Right, right. They need help with their problem. We try to solve their specific issue.
Okay. So it's the difference between people who call the show here versus people who are listening who might be having the same problem.
Right. There's a whole bunch of people listening to the show right now saying, I don't need that. I find my own answers.
Sure.
This isn't for you.
Right.
You know, move on. Not everything is about you.
So you can get specific help if you pick up the phone and call, and
right.
we wish people would. And you can also...
585-966-JAZZ. That's 966.
And you can
5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And you get that general information if you are in your car or at home and you're listening on the radio. So it sounds like we have another caller here who's ready for us.
And that's...
Joel?
Joe from Pittsburgh.
Yes, hi guys.
Hi there, what's up?
I use Gmail as a filter for some old accounts that draw a lot of spam, and it does a beautiful job.
Mm-hmm.
And when I pull those accounts into Outlook, for example, I can set the return address to be anything I want it to be. When I do the same thing in my iPad, it won't let me change the return address. And I was wondering maybe if Dennis knows a way of doing that from the mail app on the iPad.
Changing the outgoing mail address, you're going to be limited to whatever you set the return to address when you set up the account. And I don't even think you get the field for that when you set it up on the iPad. And let me check that right now. Nick, I'll need you to pad for me just for a second.
Yeah, not a problem. Yes, many programs let you change the outgoing mail address to something else. Most of those, in general, are desktop programs.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the features that desktop programs have had forever, and not honestly one of the programs that's ever been high on the priority list for most other frankly less featureful clients that are on things like tablets.
Yeah. So for in Gmail on the iPad on iOS 7, you really when you sign up for a new account, you get to put in your name. So for me, that would be Dennis Worster. You get to put in your email address, which for me is whatever my Gmail address is. You put in your password, and then you put in a description, which is just like a friendly name that you have for the account here locally on your tablet. They don't really give you the option of setting a reply to address, and that's specific to, I think, the Gmail web interface will let you do that, and I'm not entirely sure that mail.app on the Mac will let you do that either, but I do know that you can do it on the website.
Any other mail apps that you're familiar with that run on the iPad that might be worth looking at?
Oh, there's one called Mailbox that was popular back in the spring. I think they had a waiting list for a while, but I'm pretty sure you can get in on that now. On the Mac itself, there's another one called Mailplane that interacts well with Gmail. There's been a number of people who have been more interested in that in the past couple of weeks because Apple's recent release of macOS 10.9, codename Mavericks, had a lot of trouble with Gmail, and only recently, a couple of days ago, did Apple finally ship a patch to eliminate a lot of those problems. But look around. There are a lot of third-party tools, especially if you're using a Gmail account, that essentially try to ape the web interface, but make it an app that runs locally on your computer, so the performance is a little bit better. Check around. You'll find those. Mailplane is the first one I'd start with, and there are a couple of others if you look for those.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Sure.
There you go. All righty. We are going to take a quick break.
I'm going to look up a couple more of those mail apps, and we'll come back with those after the break.
Perfect. We're going to be back with Dennis Worster, with Michael Oden, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites. And it's right here on the truly great and truly
member-supported
Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, Dennis has more information about email programs for Macs and iPads.
Yeah, one of the best things I can do during the break here is get a lot of research done. So I did find a few different apps that you can use that are alternatives to Apple's mail program that they include with their Macs. One's called Sparrow, and that was actually bought by Google. You can download that from the App Store. There were a couple of others that I liked. There was the Mailplane that I mentioned before. There are another one called MailForge that is kind of a modern version of the old app called Eudora. You might remember.
I loved Eudora.
I was a big fan at the time in the late 90s. There's another one called Postbox. They have Postbox version 3, which has Apple Mail's friendliness and ease of use and a bunch of features that you really might be impressed with. If you are a Microsoft Exchange user, then Postbox doesn't support that. But it's only $10, so it's worth checking out. There's another one called MailMate, and it has a lot of efficiency and power there. Be sure to check that one out. It got 4 stars from Macworld magazine, so it's pretty good. And there's always Mozilla Thunderbird. I don't think that's been deprecated for the Mac yet, so that's another potential option. But I think I would probably recommend sticking with Apple's Mail program or looking at Postbox. Those two look good. Right. Mailplane's a good choice too.
And the
especially
real question
if you're a
is,
Gmail
can
guy.
He change the email address?
Right.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's up?
Hi. I have a Toshiba Portage Ultrabook.
Okay.
It's running. It's a couple years old. It's running Windows 7, and I'd like to sell it. And it doesn't have a hard drive, and I think I probably want to format disk, but I'm not sure exactly how to get it back to where I want it to be after I do that.
You said it doesn't have a hard drive?
It doesn't have a... it has an SSD. It doesn't
probably
have
no optical drive.
An optical drive.
I see. Most of the time, a modern manufacturer will take that hard drive that's in the machine and split it into two pieces. There will be a much larger piece that's used for day-to-day applications and where Windows lives and where your data lives. And then there's a small little section that's kind of its own little room on the hard drive, and that's where the manufacturer's data is. And this became more common as optical drives started to be out of fashion because companies were trying to save money and eliminating those, that you could boot to this, what they called a recovery partition or a diagnostic partition or something similar, and then use that to reinstall Windows. So there's everything that used to be on the installer disk is now on that second part of the hard drive. Right, Nick?
Yep. And many times you will be able to find that. You're going to have to finally break open that documentation. It's kind of sad that it's been pristine all these years, but now you'll have to break it open. And it usually will tell you where it is. It's almost always the D partition, but it could be E, could be anything up there. You'll
see a list hidden.
And sometimes it's hidden, and then you really need the documentation to tell you how to get to it. Or you could probably find the information on Toshiba's website by searching for information based on the model number of the actual unit you have. Not the serial number, the model number. So, you know, it may be serial number 12345, but the model was the U72.
Right. Look on the bottom of the laptop itself for the specific model.
What about getting rid of the files that were on there? If I reinstall it, is it just going to wipe up the index?
No, generally speaking, when you...
It'll give you the option, usually.
When you go to do a restore, you have two choices. You can do a repair or a restore.
Yes.
A repair fixes problems you might have, but tries not to touch your files. A restore sends it back to what it looked like day one.
Right. On some models, you have to hold down the zero key when you turn on the machine, and that tells it to boot into that alternate part of the hard drive. And from there, you can do the Windows installer. The Windows installer will first look at the disk and generally give you the option about would you like to do a long format, which will wipe out all of the data, and that might take a few hours depending upon the size of the drive, or would you like me to just nuke the index of the drive where things are stored?
You're, of course, better off doing the full backup the full restore because just...
Especially if you're going to sell it.
Right. Just doing the short one may zero out the directory, but doesn't actually zero out the files themselves, so somebody could go in and resurrect those.
All right, great. Thank you.
There you go.
Yep. Be sure to look for that information online. And use specifically the model number that you'll find on the bottom of the laptop.
Right. So,
thanks a lot.
Right. Bye-bye. Yep. And, of course, it'll be fairly fast because it's SSD.
Oh, I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah. So, theoretically, at least, it'll be a little faster.
Right.
SSD.
What is an SSD, Nick, for our listeners that don't know?
A solid-state drive. It's essentially a RAM. It's essentially RAM that's being used as a hard drive. It's non-volatile RAM.
So it's flash memory, like the flash memory that might be in a USB keychain drive, but just a lot more of it.
Yep.
And it's not susceptible to damage from shocks or drops.
Because there's no head.
There's nothing spinning. There's nothing moving
on a regular
in it.
Hard drive, there's a platter that spins, kind of like an old-fashioned LP record.
At thousands of RPM.
At thousands of RPMs and 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 RPMs, depending on which model you have.
Yeah, in a laptop, probably 5,000.
Probably 5,000. And that's still very fast. and there's a magnetic... had a little arm with a magnet on it that is analogous to the needle arm on the tone arm, and so that goes up and down. And back in the day, a head crash was literally, and that thing floats above the surface because it's moving so fast.
At microns,
you don't want to make them right.
It's
less than a human hair. And so a head crash is literally when that head actually touches the surface, which can happen during a big shock.
Right. Like where if it falls off the kitchen counter, if you drop it off the bed, it falls off the nightstand, that's a big deal. And that generally means your data is potentially irretrievable.
Fairly hosed,
at that point. So an SSD doesn't have that problem. And it's also at least 100 times faster than a typical, what we call a spinning drive.
Right, and the reason we're not all using them every day is because they're also more expensive.
That's right.
Because of tablets,
they're
coming down in price because that's what's used inside tablets.
Right.
And iPods and stuff like that. So we're seeing more and more of them. So they're now, and in Chromebooks, so we're seeing more and more of them. And that means they're coming down in price.
Right, and they help your battery last longer because they don't use as much power.
Right.
So they're a great thing to do. So we got another call?
Yes, we do, and it is Phil from Pittsburgh, New York. Welcome,
Good
Phil.
Good afternoon, Nick and crew. I'm Jenna's dad from Thursday Nights. She speaks very highly of you, And I try to talk her out of it, but she still thinks very highly of you.
I don't know what her story is, believe me.
I've known her for 30 years. Hey, quick question. I had a Lenovo laptop from work, and I retired in June, and they let me send it back, and they wiped off all the work stuff and just reloaded Windows, and I got it back this week.
Okay.
And the first thing I did was, of course, put antivirus on it because the corporate antivirus wasn't
sure.
on it.
All right.
And I went for the AVG free.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I get a message every day that I only have 27 days left, 26 days left. I thought it was free.
Yeah, it is. Here's the deal. And this is true of all of them.
Yeah, you didn't do anything wrong here.
Yeah. Okay. What you did was downloaded the free trial. There is a free version of AVG. It is not the same as the free trial. And they, of course, want to steer you to the free trial version because they want you to pay for the program instead of getting it just
right,
for free.
Gotcha.
So he downloaded the one that was free with an asterisk at the end of the word free.
Right. Right.
Free for 30
right.
days.
Right, right, right.
Rather
right.
than the truly free, just download it and use it version.
Well, I see. I'll just go with this for 30 days and then download. Unless I like it and want to buy it, then I can, if not, I can just download the free version.
Right.
Right. And the free, really, no kidding, free version is at free.avg.com.
Okay. I thank you, guys. I've been listening to you for a lot of years. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Have fun.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there is a free trial. There's a buy now, but if you slide all the way down, you will see an actual free version.
They do not make it easy.
No, they don't. They don't.
A couple of weeks ago, I had to deal with a client who had a PC, and I bought the wrong one twice.
Yep.
And had to get refunds.
Easy.
And then
to do.
And then I got the right one, and I was much happier. But boy, it's tough even for those of us that do this all day long.
Well, and I do understand. I truly do understand.
Yeah. No, I understand what they're doing from a business perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes giving the customer what they want is also a good marketing tool.
Well, you got what you asked for.
Yes. I needed to make sure that what I asked for, what
is
I wanted.
Right. Is exactly what you actually wanted. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I do understand that.
Give me what I meant, not what I asked for.
And the problem is they keep changing it. It used to be if you went to free.avg.com, you got the free version.
Uh-huh.
Now it's essentially like the other one. You have to really pay attention to what you're clicking on
right.
in order to get the free version.
And I don't know if AVG does this, but a lot of other places will do this, where you pick what you want to download, and then they take you to this intermediate page where they talk about some unrelated thing, and you have to uncheck the checkbox. Otherwise,
yep.
they will include that software also in the installer.
And they get paid to do that, which is one of the reasons they can offer their
a free
stuff for
version.
Free.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So meanwhile, you're installing twice as many things as you intended to.
Right. Oh, I love this news item.
Oh, boy.
I hope you're sitting down for this one. Simply put, Motorola has applied for a patent for a microphone with a transceiver and power supply that is designed to be tattooed onto your throat.
A power supply on my throat? What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? The idea is to capture vibrations directly from your larynx in order to cut out background noise while eliminating something else you could lose, I suppose.
I think I saw this in like a Tom Cruise movie with those throat mics they've got. So
they have those, and you can even buy those for gaming.
Right.
This one's actually tattooed onto your throat.
Okay.
So it's
do I have to go
like,
to a licensed tattoo artist to get this installed?
Well, yeah. It might, well. Yeah.
Who do I call for tech support on that?
Exactly. The skin-embedded device, as they're calling it,
okay.
could communicate with your handset or other portable device by Bluetooth, NFC, which is near-field communication, or other wireless protocol, and would pack a battery that, and I quote, may or may not be rechargeable. Let's put a permanent tattoo on your body that you can't recharge.
I can't wait to see this press conference.
Yeah, the patent. Well, it's just a patent. It's not a product. Okay.
Maybe they had to patent it because somebody else was threatening to
That's
do it.
That's exactly right. We may never see this as a product, but the patent adds that the technology could also be applied to quote other animal. So it's a little bit concerning that Motorola is taking its wearable schemes in the wrong direction. So, hey, would you tattoo a microphone onto your throat?
Give us a call.
I can't even say it with a straight face. Give us a call.
Hang on. We got to recalibrate. Can you hear me now?
I you know what? My problem is...
You can't make this up.
No, you can't make this stuff up. My problem is I'm old. And to me, and I come from a generation where you got a tattoo because you were drunk in Tijuana.
Uh-huh.
And you didn't go to a place that was clean.
Right. You woke up and said, oh, wait.
Yeah, right. You woke up with a bottle of gin, a donkey, and a tattoo. Is what happened.
No.
And so so it took me a long time. And I realized that tattooing is an art, and it's a beautiful art.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But it took me a long time to divorce what I...
You had your own hang-ups, man.
I had my hang-ups, man. And tattoos harsh my mellow. But it's obviously I've gotten over that. But I don't know. I don't know if I wouldn't go right back to that if I saw somebody with a microphone tattooed on their throat.
No.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor. Welcome, Gerd. What's up?
Pleasure, or any other part of the body, huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Two things. First of all, I use a Lenovo 7.
Okay.
And it always tells me or crops up to install Net 2.0, whereas if I search through the machine, it says I have it on there. Why does it keep doing that? That's number one. And number two, people will send me emails, and they'll have the full list of who they sent them to.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a little thing on the bottom. Be nice and don't forward this to everybody else, you know, yeah. Get rid of the that list. And there are times where I will send it to somebody and they'll send it back to me with nothing on there except their email address.
Yeah.
How do I get rid of that stuff?
All right, two things. Let's start with Net 2.0.
.net.
It says net or it says .net?
.net.
Okay. .NET 2.0 is something you need to have on your machine if you already have it, and it might just be updating.
Okay.
Right, so it may say you have to install it, but what it really means is update.
.NET is a set of frameworks that developers, programmers use to write applications for Windows, and
right.
That framework that they use gets updated from time to time so that developers can make use of new features. And that framework needs to be updated, and what you're getting now is the computer asking you to keep that as up-to-date as you can.
Right, and it is also a fact that many times programmers will write the thing in such a way that .NET only installs the features it needs.
That's great.
Which is great because it's faster and it's smaller.
And
but that means if
you don't
somebody...
have the security problems potentially either.
Right. But then if you load something else that requires new .NET features,
sure.
Then it's going to have to install those as well. And you'll get that error message that says you must install .NET because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't see the feature it needs.
So how do I go about doing that?
You should be able to do that from your add remove programs
or
list.
Or
from Windows Update.
Okay. All right.
So that would do that now.
Right.
As for
the email issue,
I love email. Here's the thing: there are three.
By the way, I am a paid up member.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear. There are three different fields that can be filled out. Well, four if you count subject and body, and that's five. And nobody expects Spanish position. But there's the sender. There's the receiver. And then there's carbon copy, but there's also blind carbon copy, or I guess computer copy now.
Kids, ask your grandparents what a carbon copy is.
Exactly. Carbon paper.
Trust me, I know.
Yeah, you okay. know, I know. So what happens is people put everybody in the CC field.
Right.
The the computer copy field.
Oh, right.
Clever.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't do that.
And don't do that, people. Because that means everybody sees everybody on the list.
Okay. Okay, what do I do?
You put them in the BCC field, the blind carbon copy field.
Yeah.
Then they only see you.
Right, okay. And they don't see each other.
And one recipient. You have to have one recipient for most email programs. Make that yourself.
Okay.
You get a copy of it, which you can just delete, but everybody else gets a copy and nobody else sees who they are. That's courtesy. It may well be that all the people you're sending it to are not friends of each other, and they don't necessarily want their email address spewed out into the universe.
Gotcha.
So by putting all of your people in the blind carbon copy, the BCC field, only you see it. They, the other recipients, don't. They only see the people in the 2 and CC field. So leave CC blank. Put your name in the 2 field. Or put a junk address if you have one.
Okay.
That you don't care about. You know, whatever. It doesn't matter. But put all the people in the BCC address. Now, if you do have a message that somebody has sent you with 100 million people.
Right.
And you want to reply to it.
And you want to reply to the whole list. When you say reply, they'll all show up in the CC field. Copy and paste, copy the whole line.
Control A, select all.
Right. So, you know, click in the CC field. Control A to select all. Control X to remove them from the CC field. Control V, you know, click in the blind carbon, the BCC field. Control V, and it puts them all in there. Now, when you send it back, everybody gets it. They don't see everybody else's address.
Right, and you fixed the problem. At least going forward to people
right.
who respond
oh boy,
to you.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
You'll be the hero.
Yeah.
So essentially, you're just copying everybody out of the CC field and pasting them into the BCC field.
Is there a possibility of putting those instructions on one of your...
Yeah, you need a Google help out.
We need a Google help out for this. Yeah, I can do that. I'll work on that.
That would be a good thing to start with.
Frankly, not today, but I will work on that one way or another. Maybe put it up online somewhere.
Yep, copy and paste is a really powerful tool that a lot of people can make use of, and I'm always excited to teach somebody about copy and paste because it's something that you can use literally every day.
Yep.
And it saves you so much typing.
All right, that's it. We're clearly going to.
Nope. Just a break.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster and with Michael Oden and with me, Nick Francesco. It is 44 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites at 585-966-JAZZ and 1-800-790-0415. Member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 48 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Pittsburgh on the line. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Yes. Hi again, guys.
Hello.
Just want to let you know I played around with the iPad mail.
Okay.
And figured out how to get whatever return address you want from the standard mail account.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Instead of setting up a Gmail account, you set up another account.
Okay.
And on the first screen, you put in your preferred return address. And on the second screen, which is your login credentials, you put in the Gmail account to which you want to pull your email.
Yeah.
And use the Gmail's IMAP and SMTP servers.
Right.
And it's all good.
Okay.
I tested it.
Nice.
And it works.
All
right.
Good for you. Thank you.
Share that.
Okay. Thanks. That's
Thank
good.
You very much.
Welcome. Yep.
Thanks, Joe.
Excellent. Our next caller. We'll be up in just a minute. When we get everybody calling in at the end of the show, I guarantee you we will not get to everybody. And I'm apologizing for that immediately.
Michael's moving around in a flurry. He's just a blur.
Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Just a bit of advice for your previous caller regarding AVG.
Yes.
I also had it, and it was counting down. You've got 20 days left, 19, blah, blah, blah. Rather than order it online... I liked AVG. I called them. I talked to you guys last week. I got $49 1 year on 2 computers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so rather than order it online, find the 800 number on your screen, and you call them up, and you'll get a better price.
That's a good thing. And we often see that, don't
yes.
we?
Yes.
If you talk to a human being,
yep,
and you're nice to them,
yep,
they'll be nice to you.
and it also covers my cell phone, so it was a great deal for $50. I'll
really?
Let you go.
Oh, that is a nice deal. Thank you very much, Rich. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Sadly, we hung up on everybody else because we thought we wouldn't get to them.
I know.
That happens. That happens.
Now we got to come up with something else to talk about.
We have a lot of things we can talk about. One thing we can talk about is the fact that MacBook owners are having are reporting no sound after resuming from sleep.
Yep. They put out a firmware update, I believe, to try and help
right.
with that.
So if you're one of the people, well, essentially when Apple launched Mavericks, they had a slew of new computers in the fall event. But some owners of 2013 MacBooks may be affected by a bug in the OS that mutes all system sounds after they resume from sleep. A lot of people complained about it. Apple has put out an update to the
I'm looking it up now.
Kernel. And so if you have a notice on your screen that you should update your kernel and you haven't, and you're having the problem of the system not having any sound when you resume from sleep, that is how you fix it. Just, there were people panicking the first day and a half, but Apple was pretty quick to put out the fix.
They are. And as a guy who was had his hair on fire for the last couple of weeks with clients that were calling with Gmail issues and Mavericks, Mavericks in general was the first time that Apple ever released an OS upgrade for free, and they also put it as a gigantic banner in the software update section. Big blue banner says, "Hey, come get Mavericks. It's right. macOS 10.9. It's the newest one with 200 new features. Come and get it right now. Oh, by the way, it's free, and you can have it right now. You won't even have to do anything but click this button. Won't you do it right now?" And
seriously, right now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
It was exceptionally tempting, but there's a lot of homework that goes into making sure that you're ready for an upgrade. Number one, do you have enough hard drive space to do it? Number two, the applications that you use, specifically if you're a business and you use applications to make money, are those applications ready for 10.9? Has the vendor said that they are? Number three, any devices that you use, scanners, printers, things like that, are they ready?
This kind of shocks me because Apple generally is much better than this.
Yeah, this is kind of a departure from what we usually see.
And I was kind of surprised. You know, I get it. If your audience is a bunch of home users, they're not running anything high-end to begin with, and you don't expect them to have the wherewithal to spend a lot of time calling a bunch of vendors and finding out if things are
right.
compatible. But if you expect to actually have your computers in businesses...
If you're using them to make money, if they are a tool that turns employees' time into money...
Right.
Make sure that your tool will remain useful.
One thing, God bless them, one thing IBM was always good at, and nobody else seems to be, we had, as tech support people, we had direct line to IBM.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get notices... Before updates came out to the operating systems, and this was their mainframes as well as OS OS 2.
Oh, right.
That this is coming out. Here are the issues we have already found.
Right.
If you're running X or Y. Don't update yet.
Yeah, they would take the time to do some analysis
right.
and some regression testing and figure out precisely what was going on.
And now, even if they were data testers.
Right. The competition is so fast, and Apple in general has millions and millions of people who are using their stuff all the time. And they want to have, again, like we talked about earlier in the show, they want to have feature parity. They just released iOS 7 last
right.
month. They want to have the features that support that and to keep it similar on the desktop as well.
Right. And I get it. They're also, there are no two configurations that are identical.
Right.
But that still leaves us as the guinea pig.
Before we go, I want to wish my wife, Kelly Myers, a happy 14th wedding anniversary today.
Ha! When is your wedding anniversary? Also, Tom Craver's birthday. If you see him, give him a thanks for me.
Okay.
We're done for another week. I want to thank Dennis Worcester, who came in at exactly the last minute and did a great job for
no
us.
No problem.
Michael Oden, who always does a great job on this show. Don't go away, of course, because
coming
George
up.
Is coming in with the best German music you will hear all week. So
oh, yeah.
don't miss it. It's great stuff. I'll be back here next week. It's a whole lot more of Soundbites next week. And we want to thank you for listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.